You're listening to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com for February 20th, 2006. My name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's in here with me. She's the curator of boston-legal.org and host of the Boston Legal podcast.
If Boston Legal was an illness, I would be the curator.
Yes, you would be.
Curator.
We're sorry that we've not done a show in a little while, but we appreciate you listening and sticking with us.
To reward you, we have new information. We have an informative show. Some of the topics we're going to cover today
are toll booths coming to the web.
And, well, the Olympics are here. And, of course, so is American Idol. But they're doing battle on the web. We just want to know who's winning.
And we're also going to talk to the author of a new book about Open Office. That's the open source alternative to Microsoft's Office software.
And if you have something to tell us, well, we can be reached at Rob at WebTalkRadio.com and Dana at WebTalkRadio.com. We appreciate you guys tuning into the show, and we look forward to hearing your voices.
Yes, and we're proud members of the TechPodcast.com network. If it's tech, it's here, and the network has a bunch of great podcasts out there, so go check them out besides WebTalk. Actually, TechPodcast.com has even got a new website now. You can also get us on MobileCast at MobileCast.com. Just drop the E from MobileCast, and you'll get right to the software that you can download into your phone to listen to Web Talk right on your phone. And also, I've been busy creating podcasts for MobileCast as well. I've been doing a daily Torino Olympic Games update podcast, about a two to four minute podcast about all the medal award winners.
But can they get that unless they have a cell phone with the software in it?
Well, right now, you can only get it on the phone
with
the software.
Okay.
So, I mean, we have to add some value to the phone. You know, it's got to be a reason to download that software and get it into your life that way. But you do need to have an unlimited data plan in order to get those podcasts on your phone. But it is rather convenient, I might say.
Well, Rob, you teased a little bit about toll booths on the internet on the information superhighway. And this is not something that we deal with out here on the West Coast. We don't really have toll roads, but
It's toll super cyber highways.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I don't really relish the idea of doing that.
No.
So what exactly do you mean by this?
No, I think it's a little counterculture to what we're used to with the web. You know, you just jump online, you can go anywhere you want to, and there's no speed bumps or anything like that in your way.
Or potholes.
That's where you go into it. Yeah, and it slows you down a lot. Well, that's the last thing that we want to have when we're online is to get slowed down at all. But one of the things that's being discussed right now with internet service providers is basically creating almost like a tiered service that would basically charge major websites, you know, like eBay and Amazon and CNN.com, kind of a toll for using so much of the network infrastructure.
So we would be paid a toll, but it would be people like eBay that maybe paid a toll to the ISP to get preferred. Here is the new buzzword.
Well, it's bad for the for the website. I mean, for smaller websites.
Yeah, because and it's bad for the visitor.
Well, the visitor isn't going to really pay any extra for
this. No, but we're going to be funneled someplace we may not really want to go.
Well, it's more about performance, I think, is really what the differential is going to be, and that the ISPs are going to actually get paid by Google and CNN to get preferential treatment on the network.
Maybe to have a faster connection. Now, getting ahead of ourselves.
Speed.
This is not something that's a done deal. This is just a fear factor thrown out there because of some remark that was made by an ISP executive at a telecommunications conference. But I just want to throw out a couple buzzwords. Neutrality legislation. So just think about that. I guess the Senate's actually holding hearings on network neutrality. And it's the whole concept of keeping the internet neutral.
A level playing field.
Right,
for
like
everybody.
It is.
Yeah.
Because right now, I think like this executive kind of made a remark about Google's getting a free ride somehow through their ISPs because Google's maybe charging some places to get, you know, up at the top of the listings, but they're using the ISPs to deliver that service, and the ISPs aren't seeing anything from it.
Well, and also,
Roadrunner and that
well,
kind
and
of
also,
place.
I think that the ISPs are interested in getting involved in content too, and I think you can't separate that motivation on the part of some of these ISPs that they want to control the pipe to content through their network, especially as we move into more multimedia content, which we're starting to see more and more of, that uses significant resources within the actual network. And then these ISPs are wanting to produce content themselves and sell content through their own network. So if they can get paid for the content that passes through their network at all levels, they're going to make more money. So, and be able to restrict other types of content that come through there. Now, what could happen is a show like Web Talk Radio could get lower priority bandwidth through these networks. So your listening experience could be less, maybe more buffering, those kind of things that could happen. Now, most of these websites are paying huge dollars right now for their bandwidth to be able to reach the internet. And what's being proposed here is kind of gates that would happen at other layers within the network.
Oh, for a utopian society.
Oh, yeah.
I know that economics run everything, whether you're a government, a terrorist, it doesn't matter. It's all pretty much, you know, hinged on economics. So I can't exactly say ISPs, you can't make money. But it's greed, man. I just want to have this utopian, wonderful experience.
Well,
on the
internet. If they can do this and still not have an impact on you and I's use of the internet and what we experience online, then it may be a way for these ISPs to be able to better monetize what they're doing. So it may not necessarily be a bad thing, depending on how they deploy it. So, yeah, we'll have to see on that one. The other interesting story that came out here the last couple of days was in relation to the Olympics.
And Mr. Sportshead.
Yeah, well, I've got a special affinity to this because I've been doing kind of a daily Olympics podcast. But there's a couple of websites that are kind of competing out there for attention right now, especially with the Olympics dominating so much of the television time right now. And when you contrast it to other types of programming that exist on television right now, like American Idol, actually American Idol's been kicking the Olympics in the butt.
Now, full disclosure, not disclosure, I guess, but, you know, an apology to the international community listening to Web Talk right now because, yeah, we are talking about American Idol. I'm totally aware that this is very North American-centric. Apologize. But, yeah, exactly. In television, American Idol's winning in ratings over the Olympics. On the web, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
By far. Read the numbers. This is Nielsen Net Ratings, right?
Yeah. The NBCOlympics.com site is just blowing away, what the amount of listeners. The American Idol website is it's pulling some respectable numbers, but it's nowhere near. Was it? Half a million unique visitors for the American Idol website.
Well, it's 2.3 million in a week. To NBCOlympic.com.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like four times the amount of traffic online. But the broadcast piece, American Idol's doing much better. I'm not quite sure why that's happening quite that way.
And it's interesting. And now, granted, Nielsen Net Ratings just looking at the American web traffic to the Olympic sites. But there is another site out there that they've also included in here, Torino2006.org, which is kind of the offshoot of the official site, which is Olympic.org, but that adds another 750,000 visitors per week. So that makes the total, at least from NBC Olympics and Torino 2006, about 3 million visitors in a week. Yeah. And of course, it's because, and why is that winning over the TV ratings? Well, because people are at work, they want to check out the scores, and they want to have this interactive experience online on their time frame. And they can also kind of look at the listings of when it'll air on NBC.
Yeah, well, that and also there's a huge time delay between when we actually hear the winners and when the winners actually are announced on the website. So you could actually go to the website and find out who won the gold medal before you ever see it on television.
Right. And then you can decide if you want to watch because
if you already know who won, why would you necessarily want to watch?
You do want to watch if it's like America wins.
Well, that's probably true.
Or if you have an affinity to the sport.
But you know what? One thing that I have noticed is that over the last couple of days, the speed at which they're posting the medal award winners to the website has been a little on the slow side.
Yeah, because you keep checking.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if they're seeing that they kind of want people to check the website more, so they're kind of delaying it, pushing it back, trying to drive the numbers up.
Apathy? No, because you do hear a little bit about some. I mean, I don't know if this is alarmist, but the TV network gods are saying, or the news guys are saying that there's this sort of drop off in interest of the Winter Olympics. Is that the case?
Now, there's certainly fewer people in the stands watching. You know what was funny about it is they sold out all the tickets for the Olympics, in the stands. But when you actually look, in the background on the television broadcast, it's like huge vacancies up there.
It's
in
like
the
in
stands.
The movies. Okay, all the extras crowd in behind the camera.
So so probably what happened is all those tickets were given away to all the sponsors, and the sponsors were able to get anybody to go.
Didn't you say this, that the next Winter Olympics coming into our neck of the woods?
Yeah, up in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Whistler. So you've already, you know, you're already checking out the book in the rooms, right?
No, not quite yet. But the other fascinating thing that came from this study that came out from Nielsen Net Ratings is that if you contrast the 2002 Winter Olympics, the traffic to the Winter Olympics website is up more than 55% from 4 years ago.
Now, is that just because of broadband or more interest? Or, I mean, there's all kinds of things, I suppose.
Yeah, I just think...
I mean, 4 years later. Are you talking about the Summer Olympics or the last Winter Olympics?
The last Winter Olympics.
Okay, so
which was
four years ago.
Exactly 4 years ago.
We had already been doing this show for 3 years.
Yeah, that's true.
We almost have done this, almost our third Winter Olympics in the show.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. So...
Let's, without further ado, I do want to listen to what our guest has to say, Rob Miller.
Yeah, sounds great. Robin is on the line with me, and he's here to talk about his new book called Point and Click, OpenOffice.org. And what this book is it's actually one of a couple books that Robin has written, but this one specifically talks about how to use OpenOffice as an alternative to Microsoft Office. It's certainly a lot less expensive, but it has a lot of the same capability as OpenOffice. And Robin is also the editor-in-chief of Open Source Development Network, which is the creator of Slashdot, NewsForge, and some other leading online news sites. And actually, Robin has written some books on Linux and how to use Linux as an alternative to Windows as well. So you can tell that he kind of has this a very strong open source orientation toward the computer world.
Well, he's been on our show before talking about that first book.
Yes, he has.
The Linux
book. He has. Robin, thanks for joining me on the show. It's great to have you back.
A pleasure anytime.
The last time I had you on the show, we talked about your Linux book, Point and Click Linux, that also came with a free version of Linux. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your new book here, the Point and Click Open Office project that you just finished up here and that seems to be hitting the bookstores. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you put that book together?
Well, OpenOffice.org, as I'm sure all your listeners know or will soon find out, is a free Office suite that is in some ways better than Microsoft Office, mm-hmm. and in some ways not as good. But overall, it's comparable at least, and it will work with Microsoft Office formats. So when you're like a writer or something, you're just getting going or you don't have a lot of money, everybody says, well, you have to submit this in doc format. And you go down to the store and you say, holy bleep, this sucker is $350 for this Microsoft thing. No. You can buy my book. Heck, you can even buy it on my website, roblimo.com, for $20, including shipping. Direct from me.
Well, then you get the book plus all the software, plus you get Firefox and you get Thunderbird and some other applications that are pretty powerful as well.
You know, actually, the thing is, you can either take them off the CD, or my advice is to download the latest, even if it takes all night on a dial-up. Mm-hmm. But I give you full instructions on how to do that. And once you get that free program, whether you get it off the book CD or you get the slightly upgraded, hardly to notice bug fix version direct, there you go. And I give you 200 pages of words and pictures and an hour and a quarter of video.
Well, why don't you tell us about the video? What exactly are you doing on the video?
Showing you how to use OpenOffice.org, because when you're using software, it's easier to see how things are done mm-hmm. by watching them being done. It's just better. The reason I got into videos is because I live in Florida, in Bradenton, south of Tampa, and there's a lot of retired people around me, and a lot of them have asked me to help them learn about computers, which is fine. And I was trying to explain drag and drop to somebody in words.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at a blank face.
Yeah, it's a really simple concept when you think about it, but you're right. To try and explain it to somebody and actually teach them how to do it, it's because I've had to do the same thing. People just glaze over.
But I can show you in how to do drag and drop, and I did with this woman. Literally, I said, I'll use an experiment here. I did an explanation, text and still pictures, and then I made her a one-minute flash video. Guess what? She had no trouble at all
mm-hmm.
with the flash video. She said, oh, that's obvious. That's easy.
So it sounds like your kind of long-term vision is to write fewer pages and make more videos?
Point and Click Linux had 300 pages and 45 minutes of video, pointandclickopenoffice.org has 200 pages and an hour and a quarter of video. And next, I'm going to do a point-and-click video group for Firefox and Thunderbird that will have at most 5,000 words of text, and it'll all be on the CD. And we'll just skip the book part completely.
Wow, that's... I think it's fantastic that you're doing that. I think it's a lot easier for people to visualize, especially when you're dealing with technical things like trying to work with software.
And it's right on your computer, right there in front of you, and you can just open that window and close it. And all my videos just work in your regular browser.
Mm-hmm.
You have Flash, which virtually everybody does, so it'll work in almost any operating system on almost any computer mm-hmm. that anybody's likely to have.
So is the videos showing the software, and they're just, you know, you're just narrating in the background, or is there a picture of you in there as well?
Oh, there's some pictures of me to give it a little personality.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it's talking at you.
Yeah.
But I'm not the main thing. It's openoffice.org is the main thing. And I just do things like I highlight and I cut text and I make a little spreadsheet and follow along as I make the spreadsheet and I set up the calculations. And by the way, there's a mistake in my calculation spreadsheet on that CD.
No, really?
Okay. I don't really have a good prize. I'll tell you what, anybody who spots that, I will give them a free video that'll show them how to download and burn a bootable CD so they can try Linux.
Oh, okay.
I can try Linux right from the CD. Anybody who does that, email. Well, okay, I'm going to make those. They'll be on roblimo.com, the links to them, and that's roblimo.com. I'm going to give those free to the whole world.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like making these.
Well, let's talk a little bit about OpenOffice from a higher level view. Why do you think it's such a good alternative to Microsoft Office, besides the point that it's a whole lot less expensive?
Well, it'll work in far more file formats.
Mm-hmm.
One of the chronic things I know you've heard from friends who use Microsoft Office is that if they have an old version, it won't read documents created in new versions,
mm-hmm.
and often the other way around. But OpenOffice.org will read both new and old Microsoft formats and will save in both of them. So if you have one friend who has, you know, like Microsoft Office XP, and another one who has whatever old version of Word,
mm-hmm.
you can open the new version file, the new version doc file with OpenOffice.org, then resave it in the other Microsoft format so your other friend can do it, so you can translate from one Microsoft program to the other.
Wow, that's cool.
You can also, another thing that I find extremely handy in my work, especially since I do books and I write online primarily for Open Source Technology Group, for mm-hmm. newsforge.com, for mm-hmm. /., et cetera, and for linux.com, of course. So I have to resize pictures a lot and, you know, mess with them, crop them, that sort of thing. OpenOffice.org has graphics handling capability built right in. You know, when you're making that Microsoft PowerPoint slideshow, you know, you got to have your pictures and they got to be pre-sized, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have them done in OpenOffice.org in the Impress slideshows. Why, you can just work with your pictures right on the spot. Click here, change, right click, and there, boom, 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 boom.
Oh, okay. So you can like crop and resize and all those kind of things?
Totally. Mm-hmm. This isn't fancy graphics. It's not good enough for the professional graphics people. But if you're making that workaday slide, it's way powerful enough. And it's right there built in and at no extra charge on the free program.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. Now, what are the applications that are included in the OpenOffice? There's a writer, right? And what are some of the other ones that are part of the package?
Well, the writer, of course, also you can do pretty good desktop publishing with it. You can make business cards and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't show you business cards, but I show you how to make even like flyers and newsletters a little bit. You have, of course, your slideshow, Impress, which makes darn good slideshows. And it's so fast. I've made slideshows, you know, in the airport waiting for flights when I was on my way to a conference and I put it off to the last minute. I always do that. I'm a bad person. But with OpenOffice.org, I can do it in minutes. And like I said, the graphics, having it right there as part of it, is part of the speed secret. So you do have the draw function.
Mm-hmm.
You can do all sorts of cool things, cartoon balloons and whatnot, and diagrams and flowcharts, all that good corporate stuff that makes the suit people happy. You also have a good competent spreadsheet. I'm not in love with it, but I don't like any of these office software, you know, math things, spreadsheets much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty good. It used to have a row limit that was very low. Now it has one that's at least as big as the Excel thing in Microsoft Office.
Okay.
So it is slightly slower. It has slightly different functions, but it has a lot more functions, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And you can write your own. And then there is a database front end.
Okay, that's called Base?
Called Base.
Yeah.
Now, you have not only the built-in comes with it database, but you can also use it. And in my book, my friend Rob Riley wrote this chapter, how to use it as a front end for real big-time databases like MySQL and Postgres. And these are free databases that, my gosh, we run our whole company, OSTG, on MySQL. Mm-hmm. And we do 30-some million page views a day. So this is big time.
So what you're saying is this spreadsheet that's part of this the software product, is it's very similar to the MySQL product? Is that what you're saying? So
no, I'm saying that you use the MySQL product. You install that, which is click, 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 download, free, click, 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 there you go.
Yeah.
And then, or you can have your sysadmin if you're in a corporate environment. And then you use OpenOffice.org as the front end for it.
Oh, okay. I see, so you
can use OpenOffice.org to work with really humongous, big-time, industrial-strength databases.
Okay.
Not just a little one like in Microsoft Access. The database goes way beyond.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is even though OpenOffice.org is free, you can also download free all kinds of templates and add-ons and doohickeys. You know, created open source advantage. People have made specialized spell checkers for the medical, you know, different practices, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And you can add them yourself, of course, your own. We know, you know, here's, you want to see what is proof that OpenOffice.org and Microsoft Office can coexist? You're holding that book, right?
Yeah, I got it in my hand right now.
What do you think I used to write it?
Notepad?
No.
Probably Writer?
Probably OpenOffice.org Writer.
Yeah.
And down at Prentice Hall and their production facilities for all of Pearson out in Indianapolis, they use Microsoft Office on a Mac to edit it.
Oh, really?
Back and forth. All those people who say, well, I have to have Microsoft Office because it'll do those record the changes things for edits.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Microsoft Office changes come right through to OpenOffice.org and back again.
So is there any formatting challenges that, you know, that happen as far as being able to transfer files between the two applications? I mean, what limitations are there that people need to know about?
Limitations are Visual Basic. That is, when people embed programs in OpenOffice.org and they use the Sun Basic that's part of it,
mm-hmm.
Star Basic actually is called, those won't work in Microsoft Office.
Okay.
I mean, or was it that the Microsoft Office Basic won't work in OpenOffice? Actually, it won't go either way.
Okay.
The other big problem tends to be fonts that are not quite identical. So you have to watch your fonts.
What you're saying is that the font list that's included in the Word product is different than the OpenOffice.
Correct.
Product.
It's
okay.
Only mildly different, but, you know, fonts are always a problem. But if you use generic and simple fonts, it's not a problem. We do have a chapter in the book in pointandclickopenoffice.org that Bruce Byfield helped me with, and he's quite the expert. He's been doing openoffice.org training in Canada for Lockheed Martin's people up there, and he writes for me at newsforge.com. He's really the expert, and he wrote a chapter on how to transfer back and forth and how to very easily overcome all these problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for corporate users, I'm going to give you the big secret trick. Ready?
Okay. I'm ready. I'm sitted. Something like
that. All right. There's a commercialized version of OpenOffice.org.
I was going to ask you about that, if there was any flavors of this thing that somebody would have to pay for.
Well, there's a commercialized version called StarOffice that Sun Microsystems sells. And the commercialized version of StarOffice has really cool translation utilities built into it, so you can go boom, 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 and transfer things from Microsoft Office to the StarOffice and OpenOffice.org formats with no problem at all. It's very automated, and it will do batches, so it's not one file at a time. You can transfer 500 files the thousands of files. If, you know, you just turn your computer on, go home, it'll work. You know, it doesn't take coffee breaks. And so you buy a copy of Star Office for your office. You use it to translate all your files.
That sounds terrific.
And then most of your desktops can run with OpenOffice.org for free.
Oh, okay.
And Sun is real happy because guess what? They just sold, and it's still a lot cheaper than Microsoft Office. They sold the $75 or whatever piece of software.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do any advertising. You bought it because you have those free copies of OpenOffice.org.
Oh, okay.
So from Sun Microsystems' standpoint, they've really sponsored, and they're the ones who are our benefactors on OpenOffice.org. That's what they get out of it. It's like the free version, which satisfies my needs, and probably 80% to 90% of everybody's needs, they give away and say, God bless you. Enjoy. If you find a bug, here's a report, or you have a feature request, let us know. So they have much better contact with the users than a commercial, you know, normal software thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they incorporate the most requested features into Star Office and OpenOffice, and the ones that are expensive or take somebody else's proprietary software go into the pay-for-it Star Office, and they sell enough of that they make money on this.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Sun itself, which is, as you know, is one of the biggest computer and software companies there is, they run completely on Star Office and OpenOffice themselves.
Yeah, well, I would imagine.
That's
probably the best decision for them, where they can they don't have to pay Microsoft for all their software.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's true.
And neither do you. I got into all this stuff years ago.
Yeah.
I used to write for a small publishing company in New York called Time Life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
out
a small
magazine.
One. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
small one.
Website or two, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wrote about how to save money in computing. And that's what led me toward the whole Linux and free software thing. Because one day I turned around, I looked, and I didn't have money then. Now, of course, I'm just rich. You know, I just have so much money.
Yeah.
Because back then, see, I used to buy, like, Microsoft operating systems and proprietary software. One day I turned around, who needs my money more, Bill Gates or me? Now, obviously, the vast majority of people.
You and I need our money. We don't need to give it to a billionaire, right?
I don't know. Most people don't agree with you. They think Bill Gates needs it.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, if I want to support fighting diseases in Africa, which I do, I can give it mine directly.
Yeah.
And I do. That was my choice. And I thought, well, maybe I should try this stuff, and I should not spend so much money for my software.
Hey, there you go.
And this
you got it figured out.
9 years ago. And you know what? By 2003, 2 years ago, I figured I'd saved enough money that I could buy myself a brand new sailboat on the money I saved by using free software, by using Linux, by using OpenOffice.org, by using Firefox web browser, Thunderbird for email, and so on. And it's a very nice boat. I'll tell you, I did buy the boat.
Well, I mean,
think about it.
I mean, you got lots of extra money, right? Now that you're not spending it on software.
I have a beautiful place in Florida, lovely trophy wife, friendly dog. All of this is because I use free software.
There you go. So would you say that the OpenOffice suite is not as kind of fat or feature-rich as the Office from Microsoft, and that the features in it are mostly the features that everybody uses on a regular basis? And, you know, I know one of the things that people have always said about Microsoft Office is that it has so many features in there that most people don't use.
Well, the thing with that is that, you know, you can say that 90% of us use 20% of the features, but we all use a different 20%.
Okay.
Like I said, when we started out, the truth is OpenOffice.org has different features.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say, like I said, it has graphics built in. And
yeah.
Microsoft Office has this? No.
Yeah.
Let's try to save your Word doc format, your document that you just made in Microsoft Office in Word, let's save that as a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it, but you sure can in OpenOffice.org. And PDF is what you need for all the modern digital printing companies now that you deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So it can take things direct to a printer, and Microsoft Office cannot at finished layout. Think about that.
Yeah, that's true. It seems like, anyway, and maybe it's just me not seeing things entirely correctly, but that Firefox and Thunderbird and OpenOffice are actually getting better faster than Windows Microsoft software is. Would that be a true statement?
That would be totally a true statement. Open source. And I explain this in the book, in pointandclickopenoffice.org. And last year, I had a slightly different chapter in Point and Click Linux, not at the beginning, but at the end, explaining how open source works and why it's a better, faster, cheaper method of software development and why people create free software and give it away. But, you know, we can say that for the book, but the reality is, yeah, open source is a dreadfully efficient way to develop software. And one of the secrets has to do with what I just said about bug reports. When you have an open source project, and they're referred to as projects because they're never finished, people are constantly improving them.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, openoffice.org, you can get on the same email list as the people who actually write the software and make the icons and all that. And if you, for instance, you create some better icons or ones that you like better than the stock ones,
mm-hmm.
why, heavens, you can put them in there and put them in the pool and everybody else can share them too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Is that cool or what?
Yeah, that's very cool. Is there going to be a day, you think, in the future where open source software like OpenOffice has more market share than Microsoft? Or is it kind of a marketing challenge because there's no money being paid for OpenOffice that it's not going to have as much adoption?
Well, first of all, a lot of people feel that Bill Gates needs their money more than they do.
Well,
the vast majority
they probably don't
of people
think of it exactly like that, but that's essentially what they're doing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that most software companies, let's not beat up on Microsoft like everybody else.
No.
But most proprietary software companies spend a lot more money on marketing
mm-hmm.
than they do actually writing software.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we forget about. The second is stop doing that. Why, my gosh. Cut the cost of the software down to are almost nothing anyway, but you lose the ability to sell it, to a billion people.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the truth. That's what it is. OpenOffice.org will never take over from Microsoft Office because Microsoft Office and Microsoft and all the other big proprietary software companies will deluge you with advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen an OpenOffice.org ad in the middle of a professional sporting event on television?
No.
No. Are you likely to?
Probably not at this point.
That is correct.
Do you see that ultimately changing, though? I mean, will the open source software, in your opinion, will it always be free, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Or these flavors, like what's happened to Sun Microsystem when they've done this Star Office, where that's like a flavor spin on the software itself, and then maybe they sell it for maybe $50 or something like that, and that brings in enough revenue so they can promote it. I mean, do you think that's going to happen?
Well, no. What's happening is it's still a better deal for Sun to give away OpenOffice.org for mm-hmm. free, so that those who need the extra features
can buy the Star Office.
Right.
Okay.
It's cheaper than the advertising. So it's a better deal. Plus, they get the outside help.
So what's the cost on Star Office right now?
$75, I think, something like that.
$75. Okay, so it's still dramatically less than Office for
yeah.
Microsoft. So I guess it's kind of walking that middle ground of bringing in some revenue that they can put some probably marketing energies behind it.
Yeah, but they don't have to. They can spend all their money developing it and working on it because OpenOffice.org for free is the marketing tool.
Oh, okay.
See, because you can get it and you can, it's like a trial version you can use forever and ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly it's powerful and probably a good example of this is what we've seen with Firefox.
Now, realize also that this marketing track is not unique to open source software.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very famous niche program called NoteTab for Windows, and it's a very fine text and HTML editor used by many, many people who write professionally on the internet. If I still ran Windows, I would use it myself. Always been a free version of it out there. This guy named Eric Fuchs in Switzerland wrote this and has maintained it for many, many years, and he makes an extremely wonderful living from it. And he has a free package that does everything that probably 80% or 75% of the users need. It's cost-free. No ads, no nags, no nothing. you go to notetab.com, a little green link that says free software, and you download it. And if you want to buy the pro version, the most expensive version he sells is $20.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in between is a standard version that's $10.
Okay.
He spends no money on marketing because people already have the free version, and they're thinking, well, I need this extra
capability, sure.
Yeah, and so they send Eric $10 to get clip bars and customizable menu shortcuts and some other stuff in there. If they want to do more extensive HTML and CSS and more programmability, they blow the $20. So his marketing expense, he's never done any. He spent no money on advertising ever in his whole world. He's just, people buy it from word of mouth, and I'm telling people about it right now. The free version is seriously all that 80% of the population will ever need.
Well, Robin, thank you for joining me on the show. It was great to speak with you again.
Got nothing to do any old time. Give me a yell.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We've been speaking with Robin Miller, who is the editor-in-chief of Open Source Development Network. He's been telling us all about his new book, Point and Click, OpenOffice.org, telling us all about how to use the alternative open source Office suite to Microsoft Office. Well, Dana, we're wrapping up another show.
Yes, it is a very good show and informative. We'll try and be a little more prompt with our next new show.
Thank you for joining me on the show, Dana. It was great.
And well, I want to thank you for listening to us. I really appreciate it.
I do, too. We hope that you learned something helpful that helps with your digital life, and certainly that's what we strive to do on the show. And thank you for listening. We look forward to having you listen to our next show, and certainly go visit our website at webtalkradio.com. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.